I'd like to call to order this online public meeting of the Clark County Commission on Aging. It's November 18th, 2020, and it's 4:30 PM. My name is Chuck Green, Chair of the Commission. You should be able to see tonight's agenda on your screen. If you can't see the screen, for example, if those who are calling in, I'll be announcing the agenda items as we move through the meeting topics. Due to COVID-19, meetings of the Clark County Commission on Aging will be held in a virtual meeting room. This will allow for safe participation by commission members, staff, and any citizen interested in attending. Members of the public have joined as an attendee, which means you can see and hear the event if you join by a computer or mobile device, or you can just hear the event if you join by phone. Other event participants cannot see your video and cannot hear your audio unless you are acknowledged by me, the commission chair, and are unmuted by staff. And we will have opportunities for you to join us in those discussions later in the meeting. Tonight's agenda is as follows: approval of the agenda, approval of the October 21st meeting notes, presentation of the commission's first ever Silver Citizen Award, presentations from the Vancouver Housing Authority, REACH, and Council for the Homeless on the housing challenges for vulnerable older adults during COVID-19. We'll have a meeting debrief and discussion with the commission. We'll have an opportunity for comment, and hopefully we'll have a few minutes after our presentations for an opportunity for public comment as well. Then we'll have commission communications and announcements, and then we'll adjourn. So I'm going to start with a roll call of commission members who are present for this meeting. So commission members, please say I'm here or present or something like that after I call your name. Make sure you unmute yourself before doing so. Nancy Dawn?
Present.
Amy Gross?
I'm here.
Franklin Johnson?
Present.
Tanya Stewart?
Here.
Pam Wheeler?
Present.
Larry Smith?
I'm here.
And Chuck Green, and I obviously am here. We have had unfortunate commitments or other issues come up with two of our commissioners, and they're unable to join us tonight. Commissioners Linda O'Leary and Megan McCarthy. Could I entertain a motion to excuse both Commissioners O'Leary and McCarthy tonight?
So moved.
Yes.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. So, before, let's see, I think there's one thing I want to cover first. Before we move into approving the meeting notes, is there any changes to the agenda? If not, can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I make a motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
Hey, moved, seconded, and thirded. All those in favor of approving the agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? All right, so we'll move to the meeting note. Anybody have any changes to the meeting note? If not, can I get a motion for approval?
Moved.
A second.
All right, moved and seconded to approve the meeting notes from October 21st. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Meeting notes are approved. So, this is an absolute honor what we're about to talk about here. We're going to present our first ever Silver Citizen Award. We know that there are so many people in Clark County that go above and beyond in service to their community. The Commission on Aging wanted to specifically celebrate the older adults in the county and our community for their contribution in making Clark County a truly wonderful place to live, work, and play. to encourage and support older adults for their contributions to the community and our community, various communities in Clark County, the Commission on Aging established the Silver Citizen Award Program. The award is open to any county resident 65 years or older who has enhanced the community through their life's work, engagement of others, volunteerism, and or selfless acts of service to the community for any age group. Service in any field of endeavor is considered, such as education, radio, television, business, healthcare, art, music, journalism, faith-based activities, athletics, politics, and volunteer service. And those are just examples. There are many more. Before we present the award, the commission would like to recognize seven individuals, and actually I'm counting eight, but we'll say seven, because that's what it says on my script, with an honorable mention for their dedication and service to our community. And I'm going to pause between each one so Jenna can pull up the certificate on screen. And I apologize profusely if I manage to screw up your name. The first is Arliss Bornson. And that's not the one that's showing on screen. So Donna Bashweiner. Jan Rotzman. Jane Snow. Jerry Keane. Luis and Juanita Munoz. And Molly Hands. Thank you for all that you do to improve people's lives here in Clark County. And I'd like to just give a round of applause from the commission to all of those who have received an honorable mention. Now I'd like to present the Commission on Aging's 2020 Silver Citizen Award to Evelyn Hallett. Ms. Hallett is a 93-year-old longtime resident of Vancouver and has served as commissioner of the Vancouver Housing Authority Board since 2014. Evelyn participates as an active member of the board by engaging with other service providers and advocating for adequate housing for those in need. She uses her seat at the VHA board to speak about the current lack of affordable housing and encourages the board and management to stay engaged and help solve the housing crisis. She also serves on the Resident Advisory Board. Evelyn also works with Fish of Vancouver and, before the pandemic, was fully responsible for organizing food bags going to Freedom's Path and Central Park Place, where over 200 formerly homeless veterans live. She arranges the food bags with the help of other volunteers and would make deliveries every Friday. She assists Fish by keeping track of residents receiving food. To help with recreation and community engagement, Evelyn organized a day trip for 12 veteran residents of Central Park Place who went to the beach. She arranged for transportation, a driver, and packed everyone's lunch. For many, this was the first outing they had experienced in years. She works tirelessly to promote good nutrition and recreational activities for seniors. Pre-pandemic, she worked for the City of Vancouver's Parks and Recreation as a hostess at Luke Key Senior Center and volunteers for Meals on Wheels. And this is wearing me out just saying everything that she's done. She worked at Luke Key Center during the lunch hours by running the counter and organized dances for senior citizens. As a former surgical nurse, she understands the importance of good nutrition and physical activity for seniors. She's also on the advisory board for the center. Public transportation in downtown Vancouver is limited. I should know that because I was project manager for the Vine, and particularly for senior citizens. Evelyn has been working with CTRAN, good for you, to advocate for good transportation for seniors to get them to and from grocery stores and other shopping. Evelyn also visits the Vancouver Navigation Center, where she meets with patrons and tries to offer solutions. She attends meetings to understand the issue and uses her influence to advocate. It may not be a surprise to anybody listening in on this that Ms. Hallett is an energetic, caring, and dedicated to your community. Once she puts her mind to resolving an issue, she rolls up her sleeves and gets it done. So let's hear what others have to say about Ms. Hallett.
No sound.
Sorry, let me try that again.
Clark County recognizes that older adults are valuable contributors to the vitality of this community. To encourage and support older adults for their contributions to their communities, the Clark County Commission on Aging has established a program to recognize older adults by means of an annual award. The award is open to any county resident 65 years or older who has enhanced the community through their life's work, engagement of others, volunteerism, or selfless acts of service to the community.
Evelyn has been a commissioner with the Vancouver Housing Authority since 2014. She's a compassionate member of the board. She looks out for vulnerable people in our community. She has a special place in her heart for veterans, especially. She's assisted at Central Park Place with providing food and just being available to the veterans and in that community.
Evelyn, congratulations. You really deserve this award more than anyone I can think of. Your dedication to this community, your tenacity, your spunk are all just wonderful parts of what make you such a great person. We're so grateful for everything that you've done for all of our community, but in particular, the veterans at Central Park Place. Every Friday you show up with food, and it's like a scramble drill inside that building. The guys all just jump and they want to come help you because you're helping them, and it's infectious.
Evelyn is the epitome of life begins after 50. Evelyn was a caregiver and she took care of all of her family and her daughters. And she just, life gave her lots of things to be challenged about. But in the golden years, Evelyn has been able to put those into service and into her community, and the blessings have come tenfold. Evelyn is what we would say dynamite comes in small packages, and she's my hero.
I met Evelyn several years back. She is a volunteer at Fisher Vancouver, and she's one of the most amazing volunteers we've had. Not only because she's just an amazing woman, she's spunky, she's exciting. When she enters the room, she excites the room. She does so much for Fisher Vancouver. She helps make up our veterans bags that we deliver to veterans homes. And she has just been an amazing volunteer for Fish. We're so excited that she's getting this award. And I just wanted to say thank you, Evelyn, for all you've done for Fish. I am absolutely thrilled to be speaking to you in support of Evelyn Hallett's nomination. She is just an absolutely remarkable individual. I've had the great honor of serving on the Vancouver Housing Authority Board of Commissioners with Evelyn for 3 or 4 years now. And man, every meeting, all the commissioners are so impressed with Evelyn's activities throughout the community. She is just a truly remarkable person.
Great video. Lori, did you want to say a few words?
Go ahead. They can hear you now.
Oh, were you talking to me?
Yes.
Oh, Larry, I want to say.
Larry Smith.
Yeah. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi, Larry.
How you doing? I just want to say a few comments about Evelyn because I've known her for, good golly, at least over 10 years. She's, you know, volunteers, especially seniors, are the lifeblood of our community. They add quality of life, and you can go to any nonprofit organization and look around, and if it wasn't for those seniors in there volunteering their time and efforts to get things done and provide a service to folks in need, we'd be in deep trouble. Evelyn, when she walks into a room, lights it up. Her energy, her compassion, her caring, she's just everything. You can talk to any veteran, and I'm a veteran. They know Evelyn. They know what she does for veterans and how she helps them out and how sensitive she is to their needs. Lupke Center, I mean, any senior, when you have dances over there and folks come in for lunch, she's the greeter. She makes sure those folks are taken care of. And if they have any issues and so forth, she directs them to the right place. Fish, VHA, as a member of the board over there, she just does a phenomenal job. I'll say this, and I know she'll blush again. It's hard to believe she does not look 93. She looks about 25. She operates at that speed of a 25-year-old. She's just an extraordinary person, and I'm very happy for you, Evelyn.
Thank you, Larry. Actually, right. I'm 95. I cut the corner. I hit it for 100, fellas.
Good for you. I want to just first, it's my absolute honor, Evelyn, to present you. And I don't know if you can see this.
Oh, yes, I can.
This is it, and you're going to get this somehow very soon.
Science going to take
first that ever out. Silver Citizen Award. Here it is, and it's going to be in your hands very soon. Okay. And I want to congratulate you, and I ask the commission to join me in a round of applause.
Well, thank you.
Congratulations, Evelyn.
Would you like to say a few words?
I'd like to say a few words, yes. First of all, I want to thank you very much, and I think this is just a fabulous thing to do. It's just another thing that Vancouver can put out that's just terrific. And then I wanted, and then the there's so many people out there, and it must be extremely hard to find. There are so many people that could get an award for what they do, and I meet them every day. So this is just a real, real pleasure for me, and I really thank Saeed for nominating me. Yeah. He had to stay after a night because I told him he had to be penalized because he's the one that put me up there for that award. So I appreciate it, and I'm delighted for the people that will come after me, but this is really a pleasure being the first person. Okay, I like that.
It's an honor awarding you, and I want to just, on behalf of the commission, thank you for all that you do, and I'm just amazed at all that you do.
You've got a lot more to do yet.
Well, that's good. You're putting us all to, putting the rest of us to shame, but keep doing that. Well, and I want to say thank you, and I want to thank all of those honorable mention, and just all of what you all have done for us in the community, especially for senior adults. Just thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Bless you.
Okay. Well, thank you. This is quite an honor. And you know what the best part is? I get to tell this to my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. Hey, age does not define us.
That's right.
Yay!
We can still produce even though we're up in years. Okay, so that's I think that probably will be the nicest thing because I immediately sent all the information via the computer. Hey, looky here. So that was great. I really like that part. Oh my God, right. What are you doing with that? Okay.
Well, thank you again, Evelyn. And thank you. You're welcome to stay on for the rest of our meeting. We've got some excellent presentations coming up. So I want to thank everybody who's joined us for that presentation. And I'm going to move us now into our next presentation. And now we are going to hear presentations from local housing organizations. one of which is where Evelyn happens to be at the VHA, on how COVID-19 impacted older adults in housing. Seniors have been among the hardest hit by the pandemic around the country. In addition, older adults experiencing homelessness are a growing population that is particularly vulnerable to contracting and dying from COVID-19. And we have been hearing that, especially this past few weeks. Amid this emergency, affordable housing and service providers have had to adapt the way they assist seniors and other vulnerable populations. We will have a question session from commission members after each presentation, if we have a few minutes. And then after all the presentations, we'll provide an opportunity for the public to ask questions or make comments after the presenters have concluded. So please make sure you jot down your questions. And then I believe there's a hand raise or something that will trigger staff so we can invite you in for that comment period. Our first presenter is Hillary Prepula. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that name. She's Community and Social Services Manager for Vancouver Housing Authority. Hillary, please take it away.
Thank you, Chuck. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Good evening. And I don't know if Evelyn's still on, but Evelyn, congratulations. That was a very inspirational story. And yeah, very cool. Very excited for you. So I haven't done a presentation online like this before, where I actually prefer it, where I don't see my face, but I don't get to see your guys' face or your reactions. So if I try to tell a funny joke and I don't hear anything back, then I'm just going to assume that it was funny and that you guys are laughing. Listening to myself talk is probably not the best choice for myself, but I appreciate the opportunity just to have a conversation with you guys about housing impacts of COVID-19 on vulnerable older adults. As Chuck said, I work for the Vancouver Housing Authority. I am the Community and Social Services Manager. I also manage our Senior Service Coordination Program that the Vancouver Housing Authority operates at several of our subsidized housing buildings for seniors. Can we go to the next slide? Thank you. So this is a little bit about us. Our mission obviously is to provide opportunities to people who experience barriers to housing because of income, disability, or special needs. We have in our portfolio over 3,000 units in Clark County. Those are units that we own and operate, or we own and someone else operates through a property management company. We have over 2,500 housing choice vouchers in our portfolio as well. And these are vouchers that renters can use in the regular rental market, and they are subsidized, which means the housing authority pays a portion of the rent directly to the landlord, and the low-income household member pays their portion to the landlord as well. And then we also have over 600 low-income seniors that reside in our independent living buildings. And since we're talking about housing impacts of vulnerable older adults in Clark County, this is the specific population that I'll be talking about tonight. Next slide. So this will kind of give you a little more information about the older adults in our VHA housing, to kind of help you understand who our residents are. Although our population of older adults are relatively young, the average age is 71. As you can see, their income is very low. The average annual income is only $13,662, and over half of them have in-home care providers. So as you can see, the Housing Authority does serve an exceptionally vulnerable population as it relates to social determinants of health, even outside of COVID. So when COVID came, it had a huge impact on the way we were operating. Next slide, please. So I like to break up COVID into two timeframes. I think there was this initial or early almost panic response and subsequent impact on the community that I probably think most social service agencies had when COVID came. Then as time went on and we sort of began to realize COVID wasn't going away anytime soon, there was a sort of a shift from this panic really to maybe, apathy, I guess, maybe even frustration, and some of the subsequent impacts of that from our residents. So I decided it'd probably be good to sort of break these two timeframes up, as well as the community, and in particular, the VHA's response to those trends. In the beginning, we did see some reduced lease up. That's because particularly everyone went from being in the office to being at home. But there was also a lot of fear and unknown about how to safely move someone into a building. So that subsequently slowed our lease up rate, which had a negative impact, obviously, on seniors who were waiting to get into housing, and then trickled that down to, I'm sure Kate will speak of, more challenges with those who were houseless or homeless. We started initially by closing all of the common areas and all the visiting activities. They were all canceled, which I think in the beginning residents were actually glad about. But then we started to put out a survey asking people what were some of their needs, what were they anxious about, what were they needing to just be in their home. What we got back was, we needed a lot of assistance with health and safety. People were worried about COVID. They didn't have a good understanding of how it might impact them. Transportation almost ceased. CTRAN wasn't doing their runs as much anymore. And food was a big issue. People were really worried, was Meals on Wheels gonna come? If they had it, if they didn't, how are they gonna get to the grocery store? So there was a lot of fear initially. Then we also did some on-site, our on-site resources were diminished by up to 80%. So, and I kind of included that as well as like our service coordinators who are typically on-site and they help with coordinating appointments. They do individual ADL assessments. They refer people to America, to the Agency on Aging for care. Do a lot of coordination and community building. And when they went away, it really did have a huge impact, not to mention the transportation issue. Most of the residents relying on the grocery store. We used to have people coming in into our buildings to do fitness classes, and that was no longer happening. So there was quite a bit of, all of a sudden it just kind of went dead. And next slide, please. So after the initial overwhelming panic of what do we need to do and how are we going to keep people safe in their units, we started receiving an overwhelming response from the community to help. It was really quite impressive. We worked pretty closely with the Meals on Wheels and the food bank to bring in food and commodities on a very consistent basis to all of the residents in our complexes, which was wonderful. That was based on our response to the survey concerns of food. The service coordinators were able to provide isolation intervention via their time was shifting from helping with paperwork and assisting with getting resources coordinated to their homes and in and out of their homes to spending just an hour on the phone with them, asking them how they were doing. We did a lot of initially helping people get their internet connected, get devices that they could connect with family members early on. There was a lot of concern about PPE just in the buildings. If our common areas were closed, but someone had to go downstairs to get their mail, how are they going to do that? We provided face masks and hand sanitizer. And then one really cool thing that Bridgeview, our partner agency, did was did a social media campaign for letters, cards, and warm messages from the community, which infiltrated our seniors in their homes, just as an effort to try to reduce that feeling of isolation. Faith-based organizations also brought in toiletries, household goods, puzzles, books, and other items to keep the residents occupied in their units. Next slide, please. Then time went on, and this is what I would consider the second time frame of COVID. What I would say is the now, COVID now. This is after the initial panic subsided, and we all realized we were going to have to continue living and trying to thrive in this pandemic. There's some good news in here. We had, as a result of our locking down and really providing PPE and education about health and safety to our buildings, we've had less than 20 COVID positive cases amongst over 600 residents. So that's actually a pretty good statistic. We were concerned about the space in these buildings and how much residents liked to move around and be together. We did experience an increase in requests for caregivers during this time. I'm not sure if that's related to behavioral health issues right now. Our service coordinators do depression screenings with our residents. Some of those indicators did go up as a result of COVID, but we can't really directly relate those to caregiver requests. And then as time went on, we've seen some non-compliance with social distancing and mask wearing, which I think has been typical in a lot of apartment complexes. You know, I think they're just getting tired and weary of having to be distant from each other, and especially in communities where they are so used to being together. And that's why I included this picture of, this is, I think, senior facilities and the empty space that exists in there now. The lease-ups continue now. We've got that back and rolling, so that's a good thing. Vacancies really only happen during, if someone's transitioning into another unit or into long-term care. So we don't have a lot of turnover, honestly, in subsidized housing. I'm sure that's not a shocker, but you know, our seniors tend to stay as long as they can. But that does mean when the wait lists open up, as a result, they fill up very quickly. So there's still a huge need. And I'm assuming, and I know this for a fact, when they open up, they're closed. And there's dozens of people who aren't able to get onto the wait list. So that has been a big impact. I think the biggest impact that we've seen on residents is isolation. Just that over time, not being able to be with each other, not having that service coordination and community building on site. Many of them can't have their grandchildren come and visit them in the building. So it's just been it's been tough for a lot of our seniors. Next slide, please. So our community, VHA, is sort of what we're doing now and how we responded. We did work with everyone in the building to get the Internet Essentials program, which is a reduced cost internet service. And we're trying through we actually received some funding through the CARES Act, specific to service coordinator programming in multifamily housing, which is the housing that we operate with this program specifically. We were able to get some money to assist in purchasing devices and laptops to be used by the seniors to do virtual social gatherings. One of the biggest things they are missing out on is their weekly bingo and weekly activities, just getting together. A lot of these buildings have their own resident advisory boards, and they're trying really hard to get things out as well. And so we're doing our part in trying to encourage that through these virtual social gatherings. This picture here was one of our service coordinators brought their monthly newsletter, which includes all of the information, health information, as well as, you know, what's going on in the community and what they can do during the month, with some tea and some chocolate and just a treat. Well received, obviously, by our seniors, who, you know, have just been shut up and shut in their house and not been able to visit with friends. I think we're also adapting our roles and responsibilities. Like, we used to be able to have the food box delivery brought in and residents could come down and get it. No longer can we do that. Food box folks can't even come into the building. So there's a lot of shifting and adapting of roles and responsibilities, having the service coordinators bring that up to the residents themselves, coordinating some unique transportation when C-Trans not available, and even paperwork assistance via Zoom with seniors has been an interesting challenge, but ones that I think that our most of our seniors have been really adaptive at, and it's been impressive to see. And then obviously we still are focusing on ongoing communication to residents about COVID safety. I think we still experience a lot of what I would consider just, frustration from residents after such a long time of being told, you know, they can't come out of their room to sit in the lobby or to sit in the dining room or to check out a book in their library. Their essential needs are being met for the most part, but they are really struggling with isolation. Next slide, please. Yeah, so that kind of leads me to what's next. The residents want to convene in the common areas. They want to decorate for the holidays. They generally want to commune with each other, but there's obviously a lot of concern around that. And so we're working at finding safe opportunities for residents to socialize, balancing those safety protocols with isolation intervention. We're changing how we do our work. Just as I'm sure you guys are changing how you're doing your work, there's a recent partnership with the Area Agency on Aging that will allow us to participate with them in telehealth opportunities. And this will obviously assist with how service coordinators work individually with residents. But we're also looking at how we can build community long-term at these sites, assuming we can't all be together. And then one of our biggest things that we're really looking into is what are the long-term impacts to the low-income seniors' ability to remain independently housed? Isolation is a huge social determinant of health. And if our goal is to keep seniors independently housed as long as possible, how can we have a positive impact on this important piece of their long-term health? So really looking at how can we make sure those needs are met inside this pandemic, so that we're not experiencing a huge shift of people who are suffering health-wise long-term. Next slide. Oh, and that's the end. Yes, thank you. And I'll take questions. I'm not sure if we're doing this after everyone's done or.
Yeah, I think we'll have a few minutes for a couple of questions from the commission. Hillary, anybody on the commission wants to ask Hillary some questions?
This is Pam, Hillary. And you really emphasized how seniors are struggling with isolation. And I'm wondering, what sort of thoughts or creative things are you doing to decrease that with the people who live in these buildings?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're really trying to focus and move some of our residents towards doing a lot of the things they could do before into a virtual platform. Initially, this has been actually like a 4 month in the making of shift of trying to get the usually in each building, a service coordinator would be able to have several bingo games, a a workshop on whatever they're asking for, if it's Medicare enrollment time, transportation needs. And we could always do that on site, which was an opportunity for them to all get together. And now we're trying to implement that virtually, which has been challenging, but I'm impressed with the desire of the residents to actually participate in that, even though, you know, technology may not be their strong suit. They have worked with the service coordinators on getting internet if they didn't have it before, trying to use a device, wanting to pursue that just so they can see each other and their neighbors in an online platform. Now, the other thing that we're still doing is we have some University of Portland nursing students who do come on site. They practice excellent PPE. They're there to provide blood pressure checks and medication checks and, you know, basic information and about health and safety. And it's amazing to see. We have to be really you know, timely about how people are able to meet. They can only come every 15 minutes and no one can stand in the lobby. But their schedules are filled with residents who don't really want their blood pressure checked and don't really care about their medications being checked. They just want to talk to somebody. So that's been something that continues to go as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Amy, did you have a question?
Thank you very much for this presentation. I'm impressed with how much you do and how many people are served. I have a question about distribution. When you get these donations of food and other things, how do you distribute that and decide who gets what when you get those supplies?
Yeah, so what we were doing early on was through the surveys. So if the surveys came back and we would use whichever the surveys had the most response of what was needed in that building, we would use those first. And then if we were still lacking, if there were gaps, we would pursue other services, other faith-based organizations, and say, here's an opportunity, or here's something we've missed. Can you fill in this gap for us? And between that and even just some of our own resident services budgets, we were able to kind of provide some of this, that need. There wasn't a, I'll just say there's no building that was left behind, which was excellent.
Thank you.
Franklin?
Thank you again for your presentation. It was very enlightening. It seems like your service coordinators are kind of like the backbone of how you function. How many service coordinators do you have? What kind of training do they get, and where are you recruiting them from?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. We have three full-time service coordinators that work amongst about 300 of those residents that I'm that are in this large group. They all have bachelor's degrees in some social service field. Many of them have master's degrees. And they come from work usually in with elderly care. So most of them have been either a CNA before or have been a medical social worker before the hospital. And they've been with time. So yes, they are the backbone of the work that we do. And they care very much, of course, but they're also very connected to the community and the resources. And so where in prior to COVID, they were able to kind of swiftly move through someone's coordinated needs and care and bring in those gaps that they saw inside the building, now they're actually doing some of this work themselves. So it's been a shift for them as well, which they're happy to do, of course. But I think that's one of the impacts that we've seen, even business-wise, internally with our agency. Some of the service coordinators are doing so much hands-on that you know, they're overworked, just like anybody else who's in the middle of this pandemic.
So do we have one more question, Nancy?
So thank you again for this wonderful presentation. It's good to know about this resource. And very quickly, what happens when the food bank suffer a shortage of donations? Like, I'm sure there are like ebbs and flows of the quantity of food that comes through them, thus coming through you. What happens when it dips low and the needs are at an all-time high? Like, what are some strategies?
Yeah, so to be honest with you, at least since COVID, we haven't really experienced that, but we do have some strategies in place. We have a few local churches that have worked with, they've sort of adopted each building. And so when that has happened in the past, and this has happened even prior to COVID, we've been able to reach out to those faith-based organizations who do bring in, they'll do drives for things and bring in stuff for us. So it's been a really neat way to see, you know, that when something is ebbing, another piece can be flowing. But yeah, great question.
Thank you.
All right. I think if we have any other questions, we'll bring them back to you at the end. I'm going to need to move us on to our next presentation. Our next presenter is Clara Johnson. She's Resident Services Coordinator with REACH. Clara, take it away.
Hello, can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so my name is Clara Johnson. I'm a resident service coordinator for Isabella Court 1 in Vancouver. Next slide, please. And just a little bit about who we are. REACH has 38 years of community-focused development. Across Portland Metro and Southwest Washington, we have 2,500 plus affordable apartments and over 3,500 residents. In Southwest Washington, we have 5 buildings. That's Isabella Court 1. Isabella Court New is fairly new. It's been there for a year. I'm a coordinator for that one also. And then we have McAllister Village off of Fruit Valley, and then Covington Commons, Cascadia, and the Muse off of SR 500, not far from Covington Middle School. And the areas that we are focused on are housing development, property management, asset management, resident services, and programs. Okay, the next slide. Our vision at REACH is that we envision communities where all people live in quality, affordable, sustainable homes and empowered to achieve goals and enjoying a strong sense of community. Next slide. And who are our residents at REACH? We have seniors, we have people with disabilities, we have families, we have working adults, veterans, and a vulnerable population. And the next slide. Now I'll be focusing on Isabella Court 1 because it's our senior building. It's 45 one-bedroom units. And the eligibility requirements are being a U.S. citizen or a legal resident, 62 or over, and the household must be below the 50% of the area median income. And for a one-person household, that's $28,500. And for a two-person household, it's $32,600. And those are some pictures of the outside of the units. Okay, the next slide. So for resident services, the work that I do, we have 2 main roles. We focus on assisting residents to be successful in resident housing. And we provide programs and services that focus on addressing the social determinants of health. And we do that by providing information and referrals to different community resources. And some of those can be around crisis intervention, health and safety, financial resources, housing resources, educational programming around financial education. We also promote civic engagement and have had residents in both Oregon and Washington go down for the housing advocacy days. and then we have health and wellness. We do have about 9 resident services coordinators, and we have one of the coordinators that focuses just her focus is resident service coordination and youth. And so she has a youth safe program for them. And then we also have an economic coordinator who works with financial development, IDA programs, and things like that. And then we have social engagements, like our weekly bingo, monthly coffees, and things like that. The next slide, please. And so just briefly on the social determinants of health, all of REACH's programs and services are aligned to address a social determinant of health need. And you can see from the wheel, it's neighborhood and built environment, social and community, education and development, health and health care, and economic stability. So when we're planning, when I'm planning events for my seniors, I'm looking at this and making sure that I'm hitting one of these points. Because if I'm providing, meeting one of those social determinants, it's a life-enhancing resource for our seniors, and then that in turn will promote a better life for our residents. Next slide, please. So COVID has had a number of impacts on our seniors at Isabella One, which has included increased food insecurity, social isolation, and as been mentioned before, lack of digital access, increased transportation burden, such as getting to medical appointments, and then limited in resources. And for that next slide of how we are addressing those. So we do have a partnership with the Clark County Food Bank, and that has been very helpful and very fortunate for us because I do have a food on-site food pantry, and it's open every other Friday, and residents are able to come and get meats and fresh vegetables and fruits. And then if they're in between and need an emergency food bag, I'm available to do that. We have to practice safety precautions, and I am pre-bagging, gloving up and masking up and pre-bagging the bags where before they could come in and shop like a grocery store, but now they receive the pre-bags and I'm just asking them to share what they don't want. But so far that's been working out pretty well. And then engaging residents while maintaining COVID-19. Like I said, we do have the safe practices out, signs of maintaining the social distance, but it's still been a challenge because they're used to their, we've had movie night, bingo, they have resident-led activities, they had yoga, we did coffees and breakfast. It was a lot of fun with all the different things that we were able to do. They were able to still keep their gardening for the summer. Changing how I've had to do my work, one of the big keys at the beginning, because we started working from home in March, and it was really confusing because we weren't sure what we were going to do. But one of the biggest things that had an impact was that we just immediately started making regular phone calls with the residents, letting them know what we knew, that they were not going to lose their housing. These plans are in place. And then I've started keeping regular office hours over the last couple of weeks for appointments. I'm there Thursday afternoons and any other times if they need me. Plus, they see me being there every other week for the food pantry. And then we developed some new activities. I've been doing a blackout bingo where I go and I post all the numbers for a week and they play bingo at home and everybody's going to have blackout. But the first person that gets it to me, they get a $25 gift card of their choice. And then all the participants get gift cards. And then I also started making activity packets and putting in puzzles and crossword puzzles and healthy snacks and things like that and dropping them off at the doors. And we had a wellness challenge for September since it was a healthy seniors month, and they had resistance bands and stress balls with a workbook and little journals to think the things that they were thankful for and little recipes. And This October 30th, we did a resident appreciation day and a PPE fair. And then I also went and bought a bunch of cleaning supplies to go with all of that. And they were able to come in practicing social distance and get some donut and a coffee and fill a bag of toilet paper, masks, hand sanitizer, deodorants, laundry soap, all kind of things. So that was really nice. And we have been able to make Wi-Fi available to our residents so that they can stay more connected to family and telemedicine. But many of the residents still lack a device. So that's one of the biggest issues that we're dealing with right now. And then connecting residents to transportation services. But again, those options are limited because a lot of them don't have Medicaid, they just have Medicare. And so their services are limited for medical transportation. Next slide. I think that was it. Yes, I talk pretty fast.
Thank you, Clara. Anybody on the commission? Franklin, looks like you have a question.
You had, first of all, thank you very much for your presentation. You were mentioning that devices or the lack of was a pretty big issue. Do you have any kind of a program or access point where you can receive donated devices or anything?
Yes, we do. As a matter of fact, I will send Anthony Petchel's name. And he just told us that we're having to do our fundraising different this year. So we will be on KATU Good Morning America on December 14th. But I'll make sure I send Jenna that contact information.
Okay. And is there any particular kind of technology that you're looking for, or just a laptop or anything will do?
Chrome, like the Chrome, I think Chromebooks would be easier.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, Tanya?
Thank you, great presentation. My question is around if you had a magic wand about creating or building a solution for the transportation lack of access, what would you create? How would you build it? I'm hearing loud and clear that probably Medicaid's paying for it, but for those who maybe have limited ability to access, what would you build?
Some system where residents can have a group that can get to the grocery store even. That's been a challenge. And with the price, they're spending more out of pocket because the hoarding has caused the prices of things to go up so much, but their income is still the same. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And there's no opportunity for these folks to access public transit to get where they need to go, specifically for schools or medical appointments.
Some have, but again, they're very leery and uncomfortable about it.
Yeah, understood. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anybody else? All right. Oh, Nancy, sorry.
Great presentation. I really appreciate learning about this. Because, you know, something about the transportation part. I belong to a Buy Nothing group, and then there's also Next Door. People oftentimes will offer, there's actually a little section now where people are offering to volunteer to do things for their neighbors. So I don't know if it's worth connecting with them, and there would be people that want to help, but they don't know how. So that may be just, you know, tapping into the community. And
yes, I'm working with a lady right now who she doesn't need an in-home caregiver, but she needs someone to help her get organized because she's recovering from a surgery. And her income is just a little bit too much for in-home care.
All right. I don't see any more raised hands from the commission. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So our final presenter is Kate Budd, who's Executive Director for the Council for the Homeless. Kate, take it away.
Thank you. Well, good evening. It's good to see a few friendly faces out there. Like Chuck mentioned, I'm the Executive Director with the Council for the Homeless. We are a local nonprofit agency focused on preventing and ending homelessness here in Clark County. Go ahead to the next slide. So we do this through leadership, advocacy, and solutions. Of course, presenting to you today is a great example of our leadership as well as advocacy work. We also are the lead agency for our community's local coordinated entry. And so we have a housing solution center here in Clark County where those who are experiencing homelessness as well as those who are unstable in their housing can reach out and access any available programs that they might be eligible for. Next slide. This is a picture of our Housing Solutions Center. Due to COVID, we have only been opening up to work with those who cannot talk to us through the telephone. Those who are unhoused in our community often have cell phones just as a mere matter of survival. But of course, there are some folks who don't, and so we can work with them face-to-face using the appropriate physical distancing precautions. Our hotline is the best way to access us. Our phone number is there, and we're open 7 days a week. Go to the next slide. As I move forward in the presentation, I wanted to provide just a few definitions for us. One, when I talk about seniors, the age range that I'm referencing are those who are age 55 or better. When I talk about those who are literally homeless, what that means, and it's really all tied to definitions at the federal level that we use, is that someone is either fleeing a domestic violence situation, that they are living in a place that's not meant for habitation, so that could be a tent or a car, or someone's living in a emergency shelter or transitional housing facility in the community. When we talk about those who are housing unstable, that's who we encompass among those who are couch surfing. So maybe someone is staying with family or friends, or someone who is renting either a room or their own unit and are having a hard time paying rent or are paying over 30% of their income in total to their rent. That would encompass someone who is unstable in their housing. Next slide. So I think all of your presenters today mentioned the social determinants of health. I also wanted to share that we recognize in order for anyone that we serve to be fully healthy in our community, they need to have housing. And we consider housing to equal health with folks that we work with. And especially during COVID, housing has proven to be extraordinarily important. We see signs out on the highway that say stay home, stay healthy. And we have people in our community that do not have homes, including seniors. And so it just makes things even more difficult for people to survive and to feel safe amongst this pandemic. And so the work that the Council for the Homeless does and all of our partner agencies is to help provide both emergency shelter, transitional housing, and long-term permanent housing to people in our community. Next slide. So the Council for the Homeless is the administrator of what we call the Homeless Management Information System, or HMIS. And this system helps us understand what is the need that we have here in Clark County around those who are without homes, and how well are we meeting the need? And so often when we present, we bring that data with us to help provide that aspect of information. So that's what I'm going to talk about now for the next few slides. Next one. So here's a slide, a visual of seniors, and this time it's those who are age 62 or better. And the number of seniors that came to the Housing Solutions Center at any point during the year and were literally homeless. So were living in that tent or in the car. And you can see as we look from 2016 to 2020 that that number continues to rise. It is something that I know even my staff continues to be concerned about. As a community, we should be concerned about it. We, of course, just have year-to-date numbers in 2020, and we do expect that we will likely surpass the 2019 number of 365 seniors who are experiencing homelessness. Prior to 2018, there weren't enough people who were over the age of 70 who were experiencing homelessness to put on this chart. But unfortunately, in 2018, that number rose to something that continues to be a concern for our agency, as well as our system that serves people who are homeless, but also should be for our community. You can see in 2019, in total, there were 90 individuals who were over the age of 70 that were experiencing homelessness. We have seen that number decrease this year. And I feel strongly that the primary reason is that community members, family members, friends are allowing seniors who might otherwise become homeless to stay with them during the pandemic, recognizing that it is a true health risk for someone to be without a home during this pandemic.
Pete?
Yes.
I may have missed this during the definition slide, but can you explain what unduplicated seniors means?
Sure. So basically, when we mention they're unduplicated, it means that they're not repeated. And so for each one of those, 155 seniors in 2016, they're all separate individuals, as opposed to maybe there being only, 12 people who worked with us 155 times.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. Next slide. So here's another visual, this time looking at seniors age 55 or better in the year 2019. And in total, 881 seniors connected with the Housing Solutions Center, letting us know that they were literally homeless. Among them, 369 said, yep, I'd be interested in going into shelter if it were available. And we were able to place about 60% of those folks who were interested in shelter into shelter throughout the year. For those seniors who said, I'd be more interested in a housing program and I'll go into shelter for a little while, or I'm not interested in shelter, I just want a housing program, I want something more permanent, 438 said yes. And among those that said yes to a housing program, only 16% were able to be moved into a housing program, which means that they were able to be placed in a rental unit or a shared housing unit and supported to become stable so they didn't go back into homelessness. And I share this visual because I think it's important to note that whether we're talking about shelter or we're talking about longer term housing supports, there isn't enough in our community to meet that need. And that's particularly true when it comes to the housing programs. That there's a real gap between the need versus the programs that are available in our community. Next slide. So when people connect to the Housing Solutions Center, we ask them, tell us about your reason for finding yourself homeless. And folks have a number of different options that they can share, but the top three that our seniors shared, and so this is those who are 55 and older, are in front of you there. And I think it's helpful to see this because that's what we see anecdotally as well. When seniors come to us and we learn more about their story, often it's that they didn't have enough income to sustain the housing that they were living in. We hear a lot about spouses passing away or couples breaking up or friends moving out. And that too can lead to someone having to move out of a home and onto the street. And then the lack of housing that's affordable to seniors is a very large challenge, that seniors just don't make enough money to be able to move into a rental unit or even a shared housing unit at this point is what we hear most from our clients. Next slide. I'm gonna go to the next one, please. So this is a snapshot of the folks that we engaged with year to date 2020 regarding their income. And you can see that the folks who engage with us on average have very low incomes. The average, whether it's age 55 or better or age 70 or better, all fall below that 30% of the area of median income. And if you cross-reference those average incomes with the fair market rents of a studio or one bedroom, you can see why folks are having a really hard time finding a place to live, because they don't have, on average, enough money to be able to even move into a studio unit. And we've actually, in the last 5 years, we've seen the costs of rent go up on average by $300. And on average, if someone's on Social Security, the cost of living increases that have been experienced is around $100 in the last 5 years. And so unfortunately, Social Security isn't keeping up with the cost of housing here in Clark County and really across the nation. Next slide. So I also just wanted to touch on housing instability. And so these are the folks who are renting or might be couch surfing. And approximately 26% of seniors over age 55 in Clark County are rent burdened. And so that means they're spending over 30% of their income on rent. And in our work, that's definitely not surprising to us. We are one of the agencies that's providing eviction rent assistance right now due to the COVID crisis. And we have a wait list of over 900 households that are seeking rent assistance right now. And almost a third of those households are seniors. And when we talk to the seniors as to what are some of the challenges, is that, you know, they aren't able to go out and engage with folks or, you know, even to be able to go to the Loop Key Center, for example, to get free food. And so they're sharing with us that their costs regarding food and other things are going up quite considerably, and that they are you know, having to meet the needs of their friends and family too sometimes, who are struggling. Among those who are unstable, who are reaching out to us, we're seeing that they're actually severely rent burdened. And so they're spending over 50% of their income. Because they're on fixed incomes, we continue to see that rent to income ratio keeps creeping up and up. And we talk to individuals who are paying 80, 90, sometimes over 100% of their income to rent in order to just hold on, because they don't want to move, because moving is such an enormous cost burden. And if they do choose to move, we're seeing that seniors are having to move out of their community, sometimes even out of the county, in order to find units that are affordable to them. And so it's a real challenge, and one that we've continued to see increase throughout COVID. Next slide. So this is a picture of a senior who we were able to help during the COVID crisis. She had been working with Peace Health and was dealing with some physical health issues. And our staff were able to bring about all of her providers to have conversations about what her needs were. We were able to find funding to pay down some debts she owed to a landlord. And we're finally able to find a shared housing situation for her that fit her income. And so we were thrilled when she got those keys and very pleased that she allowed us to share her picture with us. Next slide. So a few action opportunities that not only are definitely needed during COVID times, but also in general, is additional affordable housing, both for seniors and for people of all ages, knowing that there are seniors that would like to live with a more diverse tenant selection. 30% of the area median income is a key importance when it comes to serving those who we work with, those with the very lowest incomes. And so advocacy around, even outcomes related to the number of units that serve people who are at 30% of the area median income is really important to make sure that those units continue to grow. Also, identifying funding for supportive services that are paired with affordable housing dollars. You heard my colleagues Hillary and Clara talk about how important the resident services are to the programs that they provide and the stability of their tenants. And so identifying supportive services dollars that can be paired with funding in the community is definitely a need. Short-term and ongoing rent assistance, especially during COVID, but also during non-COVID times, both are very much needed. There are seniors that have very, very little income, especially those who may not have had enough work history to build up their Social Security. And so they are in need of ongoing rent assistance in order to stabilize. Focusing on equity, knowing that we're seeing more and more of our seniors be represented within the Black community, as well as within the Pacific Islander community, is important. Greater housing diversity, which also helps with the affordability. Proactively sustaining and increasing RV and mobile park options. We know there's lots of examples where mobile parks are threatened to be sold. And that primarily affects seniors because those are the folks who are residing in those parks. Shared housing and increasing transportation resources are also needed, as well as a greater diversity of assisted living facilities. As our community becomes more diverse, as does our assisted living facilities need to become more diverse in order to make it a comfortable environment for everyone. Last slide. So just a few opportunities to get involved. We have a webinar coming up regarding homelessness and equity tomorrow at 5:30 if you're interested. And we always encourage people to just simply be kind to those who are unhoused in our community, for you never know what they might be dealing with. And especially now during COVID, when everything is shut down and there are very few restroom and shower and laundry options, it is a very tough time to not be housed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Kate. I have a few minutes for questions from the commission before we open it up to the community. Any questions? Nancy.
So you were talking about how there were two groups of people. One goes to opt for the shelter section option, the other opt for a longer term. So if they were to go into the shelter, what is the term, like the duration of their stay? And why would they not all choose the more permanent solution?
So folks can choose both. That's perfectly fine. And so someone could choose to go into shelter and also say, I want a longer term housing option. Okay. When someone goes into shelter, their stay is really just based on their progress to stable housing. There isn't a defined amount of time that they can stay.
Okay. And is that tied to any kind of like mental health or substance use? Like if they do that, then is it rather inclusive or are there certain criteria without
doing Sure. It depends on the shelter and the approach. Those that are what we call a housing first, it is really focused on engagement and working with the individual as opposed to tying someone's shelter stay to their specific choices. Whereas there's others that may, like you described, say you need to do X, Y, and Z, or you would need to leave.
I see. Okay. And then my second question, the follow-up, is if they were to choose the longer term, is it all paid for, but is it all subsidized, or do they have to come to the table with a certain amount?
So it all depends on the programs. There are programs that just help people move into housing. There are programs that help people for up to 2 years with rent assistance and support. And then there's also programs for people with very high needs that are permanent. And those are often for people who have disabilities and have been living on the street for a long period of time.
Let's see. Okay, great. Thank you so much for the service. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Amy, did you have a question?
I do. Thank you for this presentation and for the work you do. I have a question about shared housing. It sounds like a great idea, kind of like everyone should get married and live happily ever after. How do you make the matches? How do you help people sustain the matches? Do you have a formal program for that?
Great question. So today, there is a group that is working on creating a shared housing program. And they have researched many different models because your points are very valid, that it's not easy to pair two people and expect them to live well together. The models that have been most successful through my research include having a mediator involved, as well as making sure that expectations are set at the beginning and re-examined at future periods in the shared housing relationship. And so I predict that we should see a shared housing program in the next 6 months or so in the community.
Okay, any other questions? I'm not seeing any more hands. Jenna, understand we have the Mr. Kimsey who would like to ask some come on and ask some questions. Could you allow him in?
I'm going to give me a minute. I'm going to pull up. I'm going to give my explanation to everyone, and all right. So people have time to raise their hand if they'd like to give a comment. So I'm going to read my spiel first and then can unmute folks one at a time. So, and it looks like no one is just called in. So everyone's on some sort of device. Okay, so for those of you using a computer or another WebEx application, if you would like to speak, if you could please use the raised hand icon. You can do this by clicking on the participant button or icon that on your screen. And the location of it depends on the type of device you are using. Then staff, we will acknowledge those of you who have your hand raised. And when we acknowledge you, we will then unmute you. And we want to note that Each person who wants to speak has 3 minutes in order to make sure there is enough time for everyone who would like to speak. So if you would like to make any comments or ask questions of the presenters, if you can raise your hand and then I can unmute you. Okay. And Chuck, you said you would like me
to- Greg Kimsey.
Okay, Mr. Kimsey, you are unmuted.
Well, thank you. And I guess I'm technologically challenged because I do not see the raise hand function under participants on that. But anyway, thank you for the opportunity. I had intended to join you earlier when you were recognizing Evelyn Hallett as the as recipient of your award. And so I'm going to take the opportunity now just to say a couple things, if you don't mind. First, just thank you so much for recognizing Evelyn. She is just an absolutely remarkable person. I've met very few people of any age with the energy and the commitment to our community that Evelyn Hallett has. And it's been just such a joy to work alongside her and the Vancouver Housing Authority. And I'm so pleased when you guys chose her for your recognition. So that's really all I want to say. Thank you so much for your work here on this effort, and just thanks very much. Bye.
Thank you, Greg. Jenna, do you? I can't see any hands raised from my end. Do you?
Yeah, I do not see anyone else with a hand up. And just if you are having trouble finding it, if you click on the participants, if you click to open the participants panel, it's in like the very bottom right corner. It is a little hard to see. So, Chuck, I am not seeing any hands up.
Okay. Well, with that, I'm going to first ask the commission to join me in thanking our presenters. Very excellent presentations today, so thank you. With that, I just wanted to see if we could spend a couple of minutes on just kind of going around the table if there's any takeaways that we'd like to bring to future discussions with the commission. I know we had quite a bit that is relevant to next month's topics, which is social isolation, and interesting some of the programs that I'm seeing from actually all three presenters in trying to overcome that. So anybody want to join in and on the commission who wants to weigh in on other takeaways, other things that stuck out with you? Pam.
I was really struck by Kate's presentation on the homelessness. And it just, at times, it feels sort of overwhelming to me. And to think that people are living on such limited incomes that they can't afford housing and have to live in tents or hopefully have family taken in just amazes me. I mean, it's just, and I don't know where these organizations go to make things better.
Tanya.
So I have to agree with the fact that the homelessness situation, I was not aware of those numbers, and the trends are remarkably concerning. So we're on the wrong path. So I'm looking forward to actually doing my best to join in the call. So Kate, thank you for alerting us to that. I was inspired by the cooperation between organizations So that was something that I was hoping I was going to hear, and to see it in action, or to hear it in action, is that's inspiring. And I guess I would throw out there, what more can we do, or could we do as a community, if we actually took that, the current light level of cooperation, upped it even more, between organizations, between teams. Again, I'm a big fan of private-public partnerships, nonprofit, grassroots. That's the wave of the future. So I think there's so much more to do, and I was inspired by that.
Hey, Amy?
I, too, was inspired by how many good people are working to help people with their housing problems. You know, I come from Los Angeles. There's like, you know, you take every number that was stated today, multiply it times 100, and it looks pretty ugly. Vancouver has a heart. People in Vancouver seem to care a lot about their homeless problem, which isn't overwhelming in the size of some of the big metropolises, certainly Portland. But I think they're good people, and they're collaborating and cooperating and doing good things together. So I think it's great. I'm not sure. I'd have to think about how we could turn all this that we've learned into a recommendation to the county council for what either funding is needed, or what laws could be changed to make this easier for everyone. I mean, I think the obvious answer is triple the Medicaid budget, but that's not going to happen. Certainly not from the county councilors.
Thank you, Amy. Anybody else want to join in? Franklin.
I almost feel overwhelmed hearing all of this information. It's very pertinent information. And again, I just want to thank all the people who presented today and for the work you do, the tireless work that you do. It's so much appreciated. And I guess the one question I have is kind of along the same lines of, is it just a money issue, that if we had more money, or is it a combination of facilities? You know, does anybody have a thought on what would be the silver bullet to be able to, you know, make this a lot more inclusive and easier for people to participate in?
That's a good point. I think it's worthy of further discussion as to how we work with that and assess what's needed. You know, we've got some upcoming discussions in the next couple months where I think that's a very relevant question.
Chuck?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to pick up Tanya. Having been there as an elected individual, I think it's important that we constantly harp and focus in making sure we have those public and private partnerships. And that can be encouraged certainly by the elected individuals out there. Many of them do that, but it's a constant reminder how important it is that we eliminate duplication, and we also look at where is opportunities for the public to partner up with a private organization and vice versa. And it's so important. Sometimes we forget that, and I often recall my times in city council of having folks that come in front of city council and miss that opportunity to reinforce that. So just my comment.
Tanya?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't mean to speak twice, but there was a couple of questions that kind of peaked after Franklin had mentioned that, and then what Larry just said. So one is, not needed an answer right now, but is there an uneven distribution of the load? So if we look across Clark County, what part of Clark County is really lifting what city in Clark County is lifting the rest of the county up? So might there be an opportunity to kind of spread the load? I don't know the answer, but that's just a question that hit my head. And then the second, thank you, Larry, for the reminder, there are a good number of organizations in the private sector that are tackling this. So I'm going to just name three really quickly. Well, I'll do sector and then I'll do one specific organization. A group called Samaritan City, they're relatively new. They're out of Seattle. They are trying to solve the issue of social and financial capital for folks who are trying to find their way home. That's kind of their tagline. So it is creating a banking opportunity for individuals so that they can actually not just get into dignified housing, but get into a more stable life circumstance. So that's one. And the second is you think about private sector partnership, health plans, Medicaid, and now Medicare, not, you know, fee for service Medicare, but Medicare Advantage. They are investing in housing and they're doing it with very intriguing partnerships. And I'm more than happy to you know, connect any of the speakers today with some resources, at least to get you information on that. If you're not aware, you may already be aware, but if you're not, I'm happy to find those resources for you.
Thank you. Anything else before we move on? Well, thank you, commissioners, and thank you, speakers. It was some great information. I know we got a lot of takeaways. I'm going to move us to our communications part because I believe we did not have any more hands raised. I just want to confirm that, Jenna, that nobody else had their hand raised for public comment. And I don't see any. All right. For just a quick thing, we had a couple of letters, responses to our that came in when we put out our press release for this month's meeting. One was, as we've been talking about, concerns about isolation and especially what this person talked about nursing homes, but any assisted or any living facilities like that, and that's definitely a topic we're going to be talking about next month. I believe, Jackie, the other was about related to school programs or if there's any connections that we can make with the commission. And I believe we put two of our commissioners in touch with that person.
That's right. Yes, we were able to connect her with a couple different people to reach out to see, get their experiences of what they've done with between older adults or adults and kids in schools.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I hope everybody saw the emails that the county is going through a housing options study and is still looking for volunteers to serve on the housing advisory group. Unfortunately, I got a different hat to wear a couple weeks ago, so I think my bandwidth to volunteer for that has disappeared, but I encourage others on the commission to consider that. It's a very valid study considering what we heard tonight. So please, if you have any questions, please ask Jackie. I know she's I believe you're the overall project manager for that. So,
yes, I'll go. And we sent it out to a lot of emails that we have, but I will make sure I forward it on to you all specifically today. So basically, we're looking at creating a project advisory group for what we're calling the housing option study for the unincorporated Vancouver urban growth area. So this is the area outside the city of Vancouver, but that is still an urban area and it's a jurisdiction of the county. And we're looking at what barriers there are in developing additional types of housing in that area. We have a lot of single family type zoning and not a lot of opportunity for other types of housing like duplexes, triplexes, quads, courtyard apartments, things, other types of housing that's affordable to a variety of income levels. So that's what this group is going to be doing. The council has chosen kind of the interest groups that they're looking for people to fill these seats. So you'll see that on the news release that I'll send you, but one of them is, you know, older adults and aging in place perspective. So well, I'll get that out to you. So you have to apply. So submit a letter of interest if you are interested, and I'll get you the information. If you have any questions, feel free to email me or give me a call.
Thank you. Nancy?
Jackie, I'm very interested, so I'm going to get in touch with you on, you know, the requirements and all of that. So really great, very, very interesting, very interesting. Thanks.
Sounds good.
All right. Also, we are liaisons to other groups. Does anybody have any updates from any of the other boards, commissions, committees, organizations that we liaise with this last month?
Well, my report about the public health department is simply that they are overwhelmed, working, everyone's working overtime, trying to do contact tracing. And I will be going, I'll be getting an update next week, but you just have to look in the paper at the numbers and you see what they're doing. And Alan Melnick gets on television and says things like the COVID crisis is exploding exponentially. And I'm not sure I understand that metaphor, but I know it means it's bad. That's all.
Hey, anybody else? All right. So next month, we are going to be talking about the impacts of isolation and socialization or lack of socialization on older adults during these COVID times, and some things that others are doing to deal with that. And we heard some this month, so look forward to next month's meeting. Anything else for the good of the order from the commission before I ask for a motion to adjourn? All right, Nancy?
This was a jam-packed information full of meeting. I learned so much today. So thanks for lining this up and getting the speakers to speak. I'm just really inspired like all the others. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed to adjourning? Well, have a great Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving. Bye.
Thank you.
Feel free. Thank you to our speakers. Have a great Thanksgiving.
And thank you.
Bye.
Yeah. Thank you all. Thank you.
Bye.